Here we go, boys and girls. Today is about the postseason and all these permutations in what has been obviously the most wild Major League Baseball season we've ever seen. I can't wait for this all to start Tuesday.
Whether you're ready or not, playoff baseball is here. And like everything else in 2020, it's going to be weird. It features 16 teams playing three-game series in an MLB wildcard round that starts today. And since literally every sport in the world seems like it's happening right now, you might not be as up to speed as you'd like. So today, as a public service to you, the listener, ESPN's Jeff Passan is here to give you everything you need to know about the impending madness, from the Yankees to the Dodgers, from San Diego to Buffalo. We've got every base covered. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, September 29th. This is ESPN Daily. We've made it to the MLB playoffs, and you've survived a lot. You've survived kidney stones.
I have.
You've survived all sorts of hair permutations.
I have.
And now the action begins across ABC, ESPN, and TBS this afternoon. But you're going to be covering the wildcard round from home this year. So what's it like for you to take in all of this chaos from what I presume is a man cave of sorts? What do you have going on over there?
I don't even have a man cave. I'm going to be sitting on my couch about 10 feet away from a remote learning third grader.
Jeff Passan covers baseball for ESPN, but he may soon be replaced by his 8-year-old son.
He's going to be clearly piping in analysis in the background, and it's not going to be like the press box where I hear from writers and their opinions. No, it's going to be from an 8-year-old who has baseball takes.
I feel like an 8-year-old doing remote learning is a pretty good metaphor for what exactly happened during this baseball season. So before we get into all of these matchups, we've never had a final day of the regular season quite like this. And I feel like you had all of the red yarn that someone hunting a serial killer arranges when they are close to their target. You wrote about all of these different permutations in play on Sunday. What was this weekend like for you?
I didn't sleep Saturday night because I wanted to answer the question, what can happen Sunday? And I didn't realize the Charlie from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, John Nash rabbit hole that I was climbing into until about 3 a.m. when I was staring at an Excel spreadsheet with the 44 permutations of what could happen in the National League and saying to myself, Jeff Passan, you crazy son of a what have you done to yourself? And it was one of those moments where I was like, you know what? I'm here and I might as well do it. And when my children woke up at 7:58 on Sunday morning and came upstairs from their room and looked at me and said, what are you doing up? The only answer I had was, I have no idea.
So I brought you here, Jeff, because presumably after you went all Pepe Silvia on yourself, you did figure out what the hell is happening. So what can baseball fans expect to see over these next few days?
I'm not going to say chaos because I think that chaos connotes this idea that you're going to have a bunch of teams scrambling to get that golden ticket and to ride this crazy season to a championship. I think you're going to see a lot of good baseball being played. It's not like all 16 teams that are in are juggernauts. I think there's only one of those, to be honest. And I imagine we're going to talk about the Los Angeles Dodgers a lot going forward. But the pitching matchups that we're going to see, even on day one, you know, Kenta Maeda, who's been sort of an under-the-radar Cy Young candidate this year against Zach Greinke with the Houston Astros. Really good pitching matchup. Lucas Giolito going against the Oakland A's. Blake Snell for the Tampa Bay Rays, a guy who won the Cy Young a couple of years ago. And then, of course, there's the absolute marquee, beautiful, couldn't script it any better matchup of Gerrit Cole with the New York Yankees, their $324 million Cy Young Award winning stud against Shane Bieber, who's been the best pitcher in the world this year and is making about $590,000. That, to me, at 7 o'clock tonight on ESPN, plug, plug, feels like the matchup that everyone is going to want to watch, regardless of whether you're a Yankees fan or a Cleveland Indians fan.
So let's jump into two of those behemoths that you mentioned, the Yankees and the Dodgers, because on this show, those are the two teams that you predicted would see each other when the World Series finally, if it ever finally arrived. So the five-seed Yankees, let's start there first. They're taking on Cleveland. The Dodgers, who have the best record in baseball, they face the Brewers. So in terms of that particular World Series matchup, do you like their chances to make it through this tournament, knowing what you know now?
I like the Dodgers' chances, and I think everything fell about as well as it could for Los Angeles. The place where the Dodgers were always most vulnerable was going to be in that short series. And the fact that Corbin Burnes caught an oblique in his last start of the season, they're not going to be facing Burnes and Brandon Woodruff now. It's just going to be Brandon Woodruff and whatever Craig Counsell, the manager of the Brewers, can cobble together. And he's got a good bullpen, so they could give the Dodgers some fits, but I think that the Dodgers are strong enough to get past them. The Yankees, on the other hand, they at one point on Sunday looked like they were facing the Chicago White Sox, who a week plus ago were the one seed in the American League. And all it took was a really bad week for the White Sox to tumble from the top seed in the league all the way down to number seven. And the Indians coming back against the Pittsburgh Pirates, winning that game 8-6, put them in position to put Shane Bieber, Carlos Carrasco, and Zach Plesac against the Yankees in a three-game series. And as good as the Reds' rotation is, and as good as some other rotations are, I don't think anybody is better in a three-game series pitching-wise than the Cleveland Indians. So if the Yankees can escape the first round and set up a matchup potentially against the Tampa Bay Rays, boy, they would be facing then a team that they went 2-8 against during the regular season. This is going to be an incredibly tough road to hoe for the New York Yankees if they want to go to the World Series.
So let's get into that road a little bit more, and specifically how the AL Central does figure into it. The AL Central feels like the best division in baseball this past year. They had three of the five best records between those two teams plus the Twins. How did that division break down to you, and what do you expect to see out of it?
It's just a really strong and top-heavy division. That being said, if you look at the teams that they face this year, that's the interesting part of this. It's not like you have American League and National League. No, the way that baseball was played this year is you have three leagues. You have the East League, you have the Central League, and you have the West, because those are the only teams that they faced. It was regional baseball. And if you go and look in the National League Central, it was almost like a fight to see who's the best mediocre team, whether it was Cincinnati or the St. Louis Cardinals or the Milwaukee Brewers. And while they ended up getting four playoff teams from the NL Central, you have an under 500 team in the Brewers in the postseason. You have a team in the Reds that has a lot of questions about their ability to hit. Same thing with the Cubs, the Cardinals, who knows what you're going to be getting, especially from their pitching. And in the American League, I like the ability for all three of those teams to come out of the AL, and yet I'm not picking any of them.
So as all of this geographic dislocation goes, what's happening with the Padres is particularly strange, because they have to leave home, abandon their home ballpark, even though baseball will be going on there. And the Padres themselves, the actual team, the breakout team of the year, possibly, they take on the five-seeded Cardinals. So what happens, and how strange is this for the San Diego Padres?
It's 2020, Pablo. So, like, if it's not strange, it's strange. Like, Strange is sort of just our baseline these days. And the Padres yes. do have that first series against the Cardinals at home. But if they win that, they are presumably going to be moving on to Arlington, Texas to face the Los Angeles Dodgers, because that makes sense. You know, the Major League Baseball didn't want any team to have a home field advantage. And the way that the bubbles are working is the American League is going to be stationed in San Diego as well as Los Angeles at Dodger Stadium. And the National League is going to go down to Texas, Minute Maid Park, the Houston Astros home, as well as Globe Life Field. And everything eventually is going to make its way to Texas. And I think, oddly, Pablo, we're actually going to see fans in the stands for both the ALCS Ooh. And almost certainly the World Series this year. And it's going to be the first time that that has been the case at a baseball game. We've seen it a little bit in the NFL. We've seen it some in college football venues. But baseball looks like it's going to have fans finally. And it'll be interesting to see how many people make the trip down to Texas. And I think a lot of it's going to depend, honestly, on who's in the World Series. If the Dodgers are in the World Series, I think there's going to be an influx of Dodgers fans from around the country, because it hasn't been too long since we've seen them there, but it's been 30 plus years since we've seen them win one.
So I want to clarify something, because I didn't know any of that about the fans potentially now entering these ballparks. Did you just break some news on ESPN Daily, Jeff Passan? What did you just do?
I didn't. It's sort of been bandied about at this point. There's nothing official yet. But when you have a World Series in Texas, a place that opened up before literally everywhere else in the country, you're going to try and take advantage of it, especially Major League Baseball agreed with the expanded playoffs to give players a $50 million bonus pool from the playoffs this year. And as much money as owners claim to have lost during this season, they're going to want to recoup that $50 million somehow. And I don't know if there's going to be concessions. I don't know how many fans are going to be in the ballparks, but the idea of baseball fans in stadiums is a very real thing this October.
Well, the team that I feel like is going to be there in person when it comes to Petco Park in San Diego, the American League's premier destination, the Tampa Bay Rays, they had the best record in the American League. They are, by consensus, it seems like officially now, they're on the cutting edge of all of the nerdery in baseball. And they deploy openers. They have four-man outfields. They are breathing analytics in a way that feels distinct. How do you see all of that approach working out in this particular postseason?
That's a great question, because I don't think we know definitively how the analytics teams do in October. Billy Beane famously said, our bleep doesn't work in October, and it just hasn't. And look, I am picking the Rays to go to the World Series. You look at the Rays lineup, Pablo, and there's not a star in the lineup. Like, the closest thing to one this year is Brandon Lau. And I think if you surveyed 100 baseball fans and asked them who is Brandon Lau, 10 of them might know. And that is – it is such a Rays thing to be – going with lineups that have Brandon Lau and Willie Adames and Joey Wendell and Mike Brasso and Randy Arozarena and Yandy Diaz and G-Man Choi. That's the best the American League has to offer? Really? Well, they also have Charlie Morton and Tyler Glasnow and Blake Snell. That's what the Rays do. They find individuals who have extraordinary talents and they exploit them.
As these names go, because you threw out a lot of them that are excellent but so unfamiliar, I don't know if there is a team with more unfamiliar human beings on it than the Miami Marlins.
I'm so glad you said that, because I was going to say there is something about Florida baseball where people just don't know who's on the team. Like, we were even on Baseball Tonight on Sunday, during a commercial break, we were saying, hey, let's play the Marlins game. And the Marlins game is I name a player, then you name a player. And we go back and forth seeing how many players we can name. And I feel like I'd be pretty good at the Marlins game. And if I'm not, I probably should be fired from my job. But the Marlins game, by and large, is would you like to play the Marlins game right now, Pablo?
I mean, let's go. Can I go first?
You can.
Because I feel like, all right. Lewis Brinson.
You went with like the backup center fielder. I'm going to go Miguel Rojas.
Okay. Starling Marte, I believe, is a Marlin.
Starling Marte is a Marlin. Let's go with the cleanup hitter over the weekend, Garrett Cooper.
Wow. Okay. You know I'm scratching the bottom of the barrel because I'm going to throw out a name that I only know because he shares one of my names. Pablo Lopez.
Pablo Lopez, a very good pitcher. Let's stick with pitchers. I'll go Sixto Sanchez, the hard-throwing rookie.
Oh, I've heard. Yeah. That was the other guy I knew. And I've lost the Marlins game, Jeff Bass. I'm just going to concede. I'm going to concede on the Marlins game. I survived longer than I would, than I thought I would, honestly, and I still am humiliated.
You got three players.
All right, coming up, let's talk about those Miami Marlins and whether they can knock off Trevor Bauer and the Reds. And also, Jeff, I need you to tell me whether or not this whole postseason format is even fair to baseball's elite teams.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So, Jeff, you just soundly defeated me in the Marlins game, and my excuse for not knowing their roster is simple. They had so much insane turnover this season because they had all these positive tests for the coronavirus. But the Cincinnati Reds were also hit super hard by COVID. So what does it say about those two teams that they're playing baseball conceivably now into October?
It's almost like they belong there as an embodiment of the Major League Baseball season. Because remember, the Marlins have their outbreak. They lose 18 players. Right in the aftermath, the St. Louis Cardinals then come back, 13 positive tests. And Rob Manfred, the commissioner, and Tony Clark, the head of the Players Association, had a conversation in which Manfred essentially said, we need to clean this up or we're at risk of losing the season. Positive tests cropped up now and again after that, but they were isolated. And teams, I think, did a much better job of following protocols. And they became more strict and more stringent. If you look at the last week of the season, every single team that was still in it was bubbled. They were staying inside of hotels, even if they were at home. Because if you have an outbreak, Pablo, during the postseason, your team might just be eliminated automatically. There are not enough days in October for Major League Baseball to start canceling or postponing games. I think players recognize that if we're going to do this, if we're going to crown a World Series champion this year, we need to be every bit as judicious as we've been over the last month of the season. And the fact that we are here right now, the fact that Major League Baseball's postseason is beginning today, we're going to have four games today, we're going to have eight games on Wednesday, I think really is a testament to the job that baseball has done. There were a lot of people, even inside the game at the beginning of the year, saying, what are we doing? And listen, they may still be saying that, but the fact is what they've done is get through a 60-game season with bumps and bruises, but with nothing terminal.
So I wonder how the quote-unquote Toronto Blue Jays feel when they hear your assessment there. Because Insofar as anyone has suffered amounts of disruption, like the homelessness of the Toronto / Buffalo Blue Jays is mind-blowing to me. I still don't totally understand what happened, but they are in the playoffs now. That team is here with us. What does all of that mean?
I think it means that they have resiliency. And I think it means if you look, there was a really interesting stat I heard yesterday that the Blue Jays are the first team in like a century to have nobody on their roster with at least 10 years of service and make the playoffs. Mm. This is a young team. This is a scrappy team. And frankly, this is a team that's an embodiment of the expanded playoffs. I don't think the Blue Jays are a threat to win the World Series this year. You know, beyond Hyunjin Ryu and Taiwan Walker, there are questions about their starting pitching. Their bullpen's been beaten up. So it's not like this is a team that is stacked with names. And yet, Bo Bichette's going to be a star. Vlad Guerrero Jr. shows flashes of it now and again. They've got enough guys to at very least scare the Rays. But I think ultimately the Rays are not just a deeper team, but a better team in terms of high-end talent.
So as high-end talent goes, in terms of the precipitous drop that many people have been taking glee in noticing, we got to get to the Houston Astros, man, because they have a tough challenge in this division coming out of it in the Oakland days. But in terms of those big names, Jose Altuve, a career 311 hitter, hitting 219, you go down the line, like without the trash cans and the banging, the trash talk has been, look who these guys really are. So what do you make of the season the Astros have had and maybe will have coming into these playoffs?
Plain and simple, the Astros have not been good. And that's reflected in their 29-31 record. And honestly, after Justin Verlander got hurt, that was kind of to be expected. But when you see Altuve with an OPS, you know, at 630, when you see Carlos Correa barely scratching 700, Alex Bregman right around 800, the only player who's really performing up to his career standards is George Springer, who's going to be a free agent this offseason. Is this the last hurrah of the Astros? There are so many question marks about the Astros right now, present and future. And I just don't see a particularly deep run from them at this point and have a lot of questions about where they are going forward as well.
All right, Jeff, the last team I want to analyze with you is the Atlanta Braves. And I apologize to the Braves. I kind of forgot until this very moment that, oh, right, they're the two seed in the NL. They're excellent. Their offense is going to have a lot of work to do, though, because the pitching staff, Jeff, has suffered so many injuries. So is there enough there for this Atlanta Braves team, disrespected and possibly broken in the ways that they are, to make it as far as they want to go?
This, to me, is the most fascinating wild card matchup. It is a starting pitching staff of the Cincinnati Reds that's arguably the best for a short series against an offense from the Atlanta Braves that's been absolutely incredible all year, but particularly in September. I mean, you can go top to bottom. Ronald Acuna Jr. is awesome, and Marcelo Ozuna has been maybe the best free agent signing of the offseason, a guy who was right there in the Triple Crown categories, almost won a Triple Crown quietly, and quietly because he wasn't even the best offensive player on his team. That was Freddie Freeman. Travis d'Arno, another great free agent signing. Dansby Swanson, Ozzy Albies. Adam Duvall is the seventh guy that I've mentioned and hit 16 home runs in 57 games this year. This is a devastating offense. And I will say this, even though the Braves are not well suited going forward with regards to starting pitching, if you can start Max Fried, who's 7-0 with a 2.25 ERA in game one, and Ian Anderson, their great rookie, who has a sub-2 ERA in game two, you know, all it takes is winning two games to advance. And Brian Snicker, their manager, if he is able to leverage his relief arms in the right way, I think they're the greatest threat to the Los Angeles Dodgers to come out of the National League.
So that's the two seed in the NL, Jeff. But the one seed, the Dodgers, they still got to play a three-game series. So as we begin this wild card round, unlike anything that we've ever seen before, with half the league playing, 16 teams, all playing these three-game series, there is the feeling of utter pandemonium. Is there fairness in this method?
It is completely unfair. And it is completely wrong. And it is not reflective of baseball's core tenet, which is that 162 game season separates the wheat from the chaff. And yet it is the reality, Pablo, that the Los Angeles Dodgers face. And if they weren't well equipped to do so, I would say, yes, that's unfair. But they are. This is a team that would be well equipped in a 10 game season, is well equipped in a 60 game season, and will be well equipped in a 162 game season. This is a team that can be great in a short series, a medium series, or a long series. And I listed the names of guys in the Braves lineup. The Dodgers can go tit for tat with them. Mookie Betts, a guy who's going to get a lot of votes for MVP this year. Corey Seager, a guy who arguably has been even better offensively. Mm. Will Smith, their second-year catcher, who has been maybe the best offensive player, though in fewer games than the other guys. And by the way, Cody Bellinger was the National League MVP last year. I can go on and on and on about the Dodgers offense, and I could do the same about their pitching depth as well. Clayton Kershaw coming back this year, looking like his old self. Walker Buehler, two rookies, Dustin May and Tony Gonsolin. Julio Urias is going to be pitching out of the bullpen, presumably. If there is one flaw from the Dodgers, it's going to be the back end of the bullpen. Is Kenley Jansen ready to get those big outs? Is Blake Treinen going to be more himself from August than he was in September? And if not, who is going to step up in those high leverage situations and fulfill what the Dodgers have been waiting for three decades?
Jeff Passan, this was a high leverage situation, and you conducted one of the best remote learning baseball classes I think there's ever been. So the last thing I request of you, just make sure that your 8-year-old, who is somewhere near you right now as you speak, just make sure that they start a Twitter account so I can get hot takes from 8-year-old Passan, please.
I might be tweeting those myself, actually. That is a great idea for today. Just at Little Passan. That's perfect.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, Pablo.
Coming up, I remember a classic sports movie that 20 years later, some of us have never been able to forget.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Here's another story I want you to know. Steve Jobs was not a sports fan, not even close. But one day in 2011, just 3 days before Jobs died from cancer, he invited Tim Cook, the man he chose as the next CEO of Apple, to watch a movie with him at his home. And the film Jobs picked, which turned out to be one of his favorites, absolutely shocked his successor. "Are you sure?" Cook even asked, according to the book Becoming Steve Jobs. Because it was a sports movie, and Cook knew his boss was famously sports averse. But Jobs was sure. He was sure that he wanted to spend one of his last days on this planet rewatching a Disney movie about an underdog, newly integrated high school football team in Virginia. He wanted to watch Coach Herman Boone, played by Denzel Washington, unify a team and a place on his way to a dramatic state title in 1971. It has now been precisely 20 years ago today since Remember the Titans first premiered. And whether you ever saw it or not, chances are really good that the movie has already pulled on your heartstrings too. The film's instrumental theme song was what Barack Obama chose to play at his 2008 victory speech.
Yes, we can. Thank you. God bless.
In front of 250,000 people in Chicago. The Washington Post notes that it's the soundtrack NBC has used in the closing montage of every single Olympics for the last 18 years. The theme is even the song the Washington Capitals heard when they hoisted their very first Stanley Cup in 2018. Now, it's important to remember that while Remember the Titans is based on the true story of T.C. Williams High School in Alexandria, the movie's not a documentary. And to be honest, it's kinda not really even about sports. It's mostly about the themes of team building and racial unity and leadership. It's mostly about heroes. Which is probably why the most iconic tech CEO of the 20th century was just one of the many, many superfans who fell in love with the film. Because it's not a movie about remembering who we actually are. Instead, it asks us to do an increasingly rare and almost refreshing thing. It wants us to feel good, really good, about who we wanted to be. I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.